Welcome to the OIME Talks podcast. I'm your host, David Petro. Normally, this podcast features the voices from the most recent OIME conference, but on this episode, we will hear from speakers from our upcoming OIME 2026 conference at Fanshawe College this spring. Today, we're going to hear from the featured and keynote speakers from day one on April 30th, and we're going to get right into it with our morning keynote address speaker, Pam Harris. So let's get right to it. Okay, so I'm talking with Pam Harris. Pam, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic is a great way to be. Pam, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you connect yourself to math.
Yeah, thanks. I was cooking dinner one day. I had a toddler underfoot. I have four kids. And my oldest came home and I said, "Hey, how was school?" Which really meant, "How was math?" It's kind of my priority. And he pulled out kind of a wrinkled sheet and I folded it out and it said subtraction with regrouping. And there were answers on the sheet, but no marks, no little crossy outies or ones or whatever. And I said, "Dude, are you cheating?" And he looked at me with, you know, no problem. And he said, "No, I didn't really understand what my teacher was doing. So I made up my own way." As a high school math teacher, I thought, that's not a thing. Like, you don't make up your own way. You do what the teacher says. You write it down that way. That was my background in math at that time. Kind of shocked me. I didn't know what to do with it. I sort of set it aside. He was doing well enough. I didn't need to worry about it. Had all the things going on. Busy mom, teacher. So the year went by. Second grade comes along. He brings home the paper, subtraction with regrouping. I said, "Hey, did you tell your teacher how you subtract?" He goes, "Yeah, I couldn't really remember what I did last year. So I made up another way." Y'all, I can't tell you how interesting it was for me in that moment. If you could see, I'm sort of doing a brain explode. Because to me, it was very different to watch the mental actions that my kid was doing, the confidence that he's just sort of logicked his way through problems using what he knew, versus what my high school students, which was, they would kind of wait me out until I gave them the rules to mimic and the steps to follow. And I was so fascinated that I wondered, could we create what he was doing, those mental actions, could we create them on purpose in my high school students? Because you might be thinking, "Oh, he had newfangled teaching." Nah, he had same old, same old. And so I wondered, could we create that in my high school students? But let me be really honest. I wondered if we could create that in me, because I was doing what my high school students were doing. I wasn't reasoning the way that he was. And so I dove into research. I read every journal article and research study I could get my hands on. And at the same time, I dove into my kids' classrooms. I said to my kids' teachers, "May I enrich your students?" Which was totally code for, "Can I experiment on them?" And I just tried all that stuff that I was reading about. Because of my background in higher math, I was able to sift through a lot of less helpful research and find that there is a real mathing way to teach, where we can actually help kids reason and math the way mathy people actually math. I'm Pam Harris, and I believe that math is figure-outable, and we can teach it that way. For the past 25 years, I've been helping teachers and leaders just like you get better results and have the confidence to reach more and more of your students.
Well, I'm going to guess, as you being one of our keynotes, that your keynote address might be something about making math figure-outable. Pam, can you give us a hint as to what your keynote address is going to be on and a little bit of a description?
That is a fantastic guess. Yes, let's talk about avoiding the trap of algorithms. So I would submit to you that many of us were taught that math, the nature of math and teaching math, was that you waited until the teacher told you what to rote memorize, then you mimicked those steps, you got answers, and that was math class. When we teach kids that that's math, that it's just repeating the steps of algorithms, students can get trapped in just getting answers and never actually strengthening their brain and developing the mental actions that mathematicians actually use when they math, and we can. So in the keynote address, I'll be talking about the nature of math and mathing. We'll do a mathing experience together where there'll be a moment where I'll say, "Ooh, how did you just solve that problem?" And my invitation will be for everyone to consider, did they just rotely repeat steps that someone else had showed them? Or actually, did they let the numbers, the structure of the problem, influence the way that they solved the problem? Were they actually reasoning the way that mathematicians reason when they math? Were they developing those mental actions of mathing? And then we'll talk about some sort of distortions that we all kind of grew up with. And when we can identify that those distortions impact the way that we teach, then we can choose to do something different. And lastly, we'll talk about a few of the traps of algorithms and how we can avoid those traps so that students can learn to math the way mathy people actually math, which means then we are all mathy people, and we can find more success with more students.
So I love that term mathing, as an action, right? And, you know, I come from a science background, you know, my degrees are in physics. And so when I talk to teachers and in teaching math, whether it's, I think of, you know, I'd like my kids to be like scientists in science class and like mathematicians in math class. And, you know, especially I think you pointed out in high school that sometimes not so much the case, or it seems to be less accessible for students. You know, when you talk to teachers, you know, one-on-one who are apprehensive about how to get there, you know, how do you help them get to that mathing action in their classes?
Yeah, absolutely. When we teach kids to read, they read. When we teach kids to write, they write. When we teach kids science, they do the work of a scientist. When we teach kids to do math, they, like, we don't really have a verb for that. They do math. So that's why I've sort of created this mathing verb to describe the mental actions that mathematicians actually do. And the most important thing that I think I can do with teachers is to engage them in those mental actions where they go, huh, if I take a picture of my brain right now, I just did this. This is how it felt. This is the sort of feeling tone that was happening. These are the kinds of things that I was doing and thinking about. And juxtapose that with maybe the way that they were taught, and which I would call sort of fake math, the way that most of us were taught in school to just rotely repeat steps and memorize a bunch of things that their goal was to get answers. I invite everyone to consider that our goal in math class is to actually develop mathematical reasoning, kids who are reasoning mathematically. And that's not some fuzzy think better. That's actually reasoning mathematically. They own content better than I would submit than if you were just rote memorizing and mimicking stuff that maybe you understand or don't, but you're actually engaging in those processes. Kind of like you just said, like scientists, we want them to engage in science. Well, mathematicians, mathers, we want them to engage in mathing. I use the term mather. Deborah Creighton sort of coined that to say we might not all become mathematicians, but we can certainly do the actions of mathing younger, just like when we teach them to read, they read. We teach them to write, they write. They might not all become authors, but they can still write. We want kids to math, and so that's why I use that verb.
So you are also going to be doing a breakout session. Can you tell us a little bit about the breakout session?
Yeah, thanks. So the breakout session is, let's talk about making it happen with problem strings. So problem strings is an instructional routine. The name's not important, but it's a way of teaching. It's not the only way of teaching, but it's a fantastic inroad. It's a way for teachers to start, but it's also like advanced. In other words, it's a way of teaching that is easy to enter, but also really good at getting then to be an expert at. We can really develop expert facilitation of problem strings. So it's a way for us K-12, super young to older students, for teachers to do the same kind of teaching routine. A good thing about a routine is that it becomes routine, and therefore students know what their job is. When a teacher says we're going to do a problem strings, kids are comfortable in their role. They know that their job is to look at the problem and let the numbers or the structure influence the way they attack the problem, use what they know to logic their way to an answer. They comfortably dive in and do that. The kinds of teacher moves that teachers use from kindergarten, eighth grade, 12th grade, they can know that the teacher moves are similar. So we can have a really vertical conversation about which students are you calling on and in what order and why are you emphasizing that? And are you using a private signal so students aren't calling out answers, giving them the misfeeling that math is all about speed. We don't want kids to, we don't want them to have this notion that math, that the quicker you are necessarily, the better you are at math. Not necessarily. We want kids to think deeply about math. That's not to say we want kids bogged down in unsophisticated thinking. No, no, we want them to develop more and more sophisticated ways of thinking, but we also want deep thinking. And so if we can help teachers have this vertical conversation about the way they teach and the teacher moves they use and the way they're pulling out the thinking from students, problem strings are just an amazing way for teachers to get started in teaching real mathing, helping really develop mathers, and a way for us to even get better at then facilitating those, become expert facilitators of this particular way of teaching. It's a great way for me to help everybody, kind of what you asked earlier, how can I help a teacher get started? How can I help them be confident that they have something they can do immediately in their classrooms to really get this going? I suggest that's problem strings.
Can you give an example of a problem string that someone might encounter in secondary math?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me think about maybe the best one to do on a podcast. It's hard because often there's a lot of visualization that's happening. There's a lot of writing on the board to help students be able to point at and discuss what's happening. Well, you might find this interesting. Problem strings aren't often off the cuff. They are most often very deliberately designed ahead of time to really promote specific examples or really promote specific learning. So it's not a trivial creation. So we asked teachers to, when they start, to facilitate pre-written problem strings. Once an expert has created, they get better at the relationships, at the mathing, at how problem strings are created. And then they might continue to just facilitate pre-written strings, or some of them might be curriculum writers and actually create their own problem strings. So one of the first things that we would do is put a big coordinate axis up on the board, and then I'll say, hey, F of 4 is 2, and F of 8 is 3. Oh, and when I did F of 4 is 2, we would also switch the X and Y and graph that point in a different color. So we've graphed 4, 2 as blue. We've graphed 2, 4 as red. Then I'll say F of 8 is 3. Let's graph that one, 8, 3. And then I'll say, let's switch the X and Y. So we'll also graph 3, 8. And then I might say, this time I'm just going to give you the red point. So I'm going to say, let's graph 4, 16. If that's the red point, what would the blue point be? We'll go graph 16, 4. And then I'll kind of connect those blue points and we'll kind of have this increasing curve over there in the first and fourth quadrant. And I'll say, well, what about these blue points over here? Do those look familiar? And then if I'm doing this problem string at the right time, I've chosen the right students to do it with, those students will probably recognize those values as an exponential function. They'll recognize it as 2 to the x. And I'll say, well, if this is 2 to the x over here, what's this function over here where we switch the x and the y's? Oh, well, that's called a logarithm. So that's a way of introducing logarithms where students are really connecting it to the exponential relationships that we've got. And we're connecting it to a logarithm over here. Okay, where we sort of started with that. And that's a way for me to introduce a logarithmic function. And we can then continue to ask, well, so then what would f of another value be? Or if I give you f of what value is this output? Or then it's the exponential function. Maybe we'll call that g. Well, what if I give you g of 1? What would that be? And so we can kind of go back and forth, and we really give students a chance to really feel, we high dose them with the patterns, that are existing in both an exponential function and also a logarithmic function. That might've been a bit high. That was a little high math, but yeah, it's a good one for secondary math.
Okay. So we look forward to hearing and seeing you at OME 2026 this spring. And thanks for talking to us today.
Oh, I'm super excited to come. Thanks for having me. And I really look forward to it.
That was Pam Harris, our keynote speaker, starting the day off for everyone on Thursday to kick off the conference. Once the keynote is done, our regular sessions will start for the day. With over 25 different sessions running each of the 4 following time slots, there's a lot to see and do, and today we're going to hear from a couple of our featured speakers, starting with Alex Lawson. Okay, so I'm speaking with Alex Lawson. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you, except for the storm that I think is coming in tonight.
We all seem to have storms coming tonight. Alex, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you connect yourself to math.
Well, at this point, I've just actually retired from the university where I was teaching teacher candidates. But before that, and really my main connection in the beginning was as a teacher. I taught grade 4 through 8. and then at a certain point realized I actually wanted to understand more about what I was doing, because there were certain things that I was struggling to do a good job of for some of my students, and so went back to school.
And here we are. And you are one of our featured speakers this spring at OME 2026. I wonder if you could tell us about your featured session.
So we are going to look at rethinking some of our multiplication and division instruction at 3-4. Initially, prior to this, I had put out research that we had done on addition and subtraction and the development of addition and subtraction, the strategies that students use and how to understand their thinking and where that places them in a way, in a fashion, in their developmental progress. And so I had originally hoped to write a second book to conduct more research. I already had a fair bit on children's development in multiplication and division. So that's what we set out to do. It didn't quite turn out the way I'd planned, aside from the pandemic, because as we got into the research, we realized that the way that I had always taught multiplication and built on that for division probably wasn't going to support students' real growth later on. It wasn't a great foundation. And so we had to change our tack and really think about, well, what do we suggest students might do instead of introducing multiplication as groups up? That would have been the model I would have done. So three groups of four, I would have drawn three groups, put four in each. Kids would have counted to get to 12. However, it turns out that when you're doing this instruction, if it's in a word problem, multiplication is actually pretty different from addition, even though you can use addition to do the actual calculation. Any multiplication problem, just about all of them that they'll do in the junior grades, are actually quantities. So they actually, all of those numbers, like I have three bags of cookies, four cookies in each bag. How many cookies do I have? So the four cookies per bag is actually quite different than addition, because that quantity refers to something, whether it's the bags or the cookies per bag or the cookies, which is different than addition. So we ended up trying to find material to use what we thought was probably a better foundation for multiplication and division, and couldn't find what we needed. So we ended up designing it and then trying it out over a couple of years in different classrooms, in seven classrooms in Ontario. And so this is what we're going to look at. We'll look at a bit of, you know, some of our thinking in the beginning, why we changed tack, how kids actually solve multiplication before they're even taught. So we had some of that footage, which was really helpful. And then a little bit of the lessons that we used. And finally, what does that mean in terms of a student progression? What does that actually look like if we use some of the slight change, not slight, significant change in how to teach multiplication? What does it mean for students' multiplicative reasoning, for division, and so on? So that is what we'll dip our toes into.
So I'm curious, I'm intrigued by the part that where you said that, you know, you looked at what students did for multiplication when they didn't know how to multiply yet. You know, that seems really intriguing to me, because we're always asking kids to do some sort of thinking about new stuff. And so, you know, what did you see when you looked at that?
Yeah, I felt so lucky, because I had all this data, which was 5 years of kids' mathematical thinking. So the first 2 years, we had four interviews where they solved these multiplication problems, like the one I just said. We've got it on video. I think it might have been packages of gum, four pieces per package. How many pieces of gum do you have? So what they do, and we realize that this was, you know, actually a signal to us, is they think about those four per pack. I've got videos of kids, many videos where they wait, you know, I'll say you've got three groups of or three packages of gum, four pieces per pack, and they wait until I hear the four, and then they start somehow dealing with that four. Some of them will, most of them in grade one, they're going to model it out. So they might pull out, they might subitize four cubes and say, okay, four. And then they'll put another four beside it and a third four. But they start with the four per package. That's what they're waiting for. They don't do what I would have done as a teacher. They don't draw three groups and then put in four as the next step across those three groups. That's not, it turns out, what they do unless they're told to do that. Then they, you know, kids will try and help out the teacher and respond, at least in my class, and that's what they would have done. But naturally, they begin with what is called the intensive quantity. It's a relationship quantity, or you might think of it as a rate, like that four per package. That's what they start out with.
Okay. And you're also doing a breakout session related to this one. Is that right?
Yeah. So what we want to do is, you know, I'm going to put this out there, see what teachers think of it, and then we'll look at a little bit of what happened with the students. But then in the breakout, we want to go more deeply into some of the materials we use so teachers could see it and see, you know, is this something they might consider using? So we'll go through more hands-on. We'll still do a bit of hands-on even in the first session, because it's hard for me not to do so. But we'll go more deeply into it in the breakout. It'll just be an extension of that. So you'll really, you know, if you want to come to the breakout, you'll need the first round in order to serve as a foundation.
Okay, so thanks for giving us a very brief intro into what you'll be talking about this spring at OME.
Thank you, David.
That was Alex Lawson talking about both her featured session and her breakout sessions. Both of those will be on Thursday. Up next, we'll hear from featured speaker Kathy Marks-Kirpan. Okay, so I'm talking with Kathy Marks-Kirpan. Kathy, how are you doing?
I am doing great, David. How are you?
I'm good. Kathy, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you connect yourself to math.
Well, I'm a former teacher, which is, I think, the most important part of my journey. That's where you learn everything, I believe. And I'm also now I'm a prof at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education of the University of Toronto, where I teach graduate courses in mathematics education. My research is in the area of effective teaching and learning strategies in mathematics. And I guess one of the things that brings me joy with all of this is I have the great honor to be able to work with school districts and teachers across North America and internationally and explore and try things out in the classroom and see what works and learn together. So that brings me a lot of happiness.
Okay. And you are one of our featured speakers at OME 2026 this spring in London. Kathy, could you tell us a little bit about your featured session?
Sure. It's called Just Because They Are Talking Doesn't Mean That They Are Learning, Enhancing Mathematical Conversations in K-8 Classrooms. So for this talk, I want to explore ways in which we can zhuzh up mathematical discourse in the classroom. How can we enrich it? And how can we support those learners who struggle to share their thinking during mathematical conversations? And how can we help teachers? How can teachers use this wonderful opportunity of student discourse to assess student thinking? So those are some of the things that we're going to be looking at and how we can use mathematical discourse as a really good, effective assessment tool. Because a lot of times when teachers engage students in tasks and engage them in talking about different things together in small groups, that's a fair chunk of, you know, teaching real estate. So we want to make sure that we can really engage the students in meaningful discussions, but at the same time, make it valuable and worthwhile for everybody, for the teacher and for the student.
So I wonder, are there some key features to determine when a student is talking and that is a benefit to them about math?
I think when students start to describe their thinking and look and respond to other students' thinking, that engages them in a really good reflective process around mathematical concepts. But I think sometimes, you know, there's different questions that we can ask to increase the learning and make the conversation a little more beneficial beyond just, you know, tell me about your thinking. Does that make mathematical sense? Sometimes I think we need to engage students in talking about their conversations. And I don't think we do that enough. Like, talk to me about the conversation you had. So there's a little bit of metacognition around the actual conversation itself.
So is there an age group where that starts to become more of a possibility?
I strongly believe that even in kindergarten, you can engage kindergartners in pretty good reflective discussions about conversations. It might not be on the same level as what you might have with a junior student or an intermediate student, but you know, you can say, so tell me about what did you discuss? You know, who shared their thoughts? What were you thinking when you did this? So we can start initiating that at an early age, and that on-ramp continues to develop and increase and get enhanced as we move forward throughout the grades.
So as you mentioned, this is also to help with assessment of students. Are there tips that you can give teachers to have those conversations become that part of their daily routine?
Well, we're going to talk in my session around what are some criteria, success criteria that we need to be looking for during when students are having these mathematical conversations. But I think what is absolutely critical is that we enter these conversations with some assessment pieces that we're already going to look for. So it's hinging upon what we're teaching, what we want students to be learning, and the kinds of vocabulary and kinds of thinking that we want to teach. And that's going to direct our questioning. That's going to direct what we are looking for as well as we circulate. And I also always recommend, and I don't know if this is answering your question or not, but I also recommend to eavesdrop on those conversations because I think they're unedited. And when we approach the table where students are talking and we pose some wonderful questions, which is really important as well, the conversation does become edited. Whereas when we listen from afar and just hear sort of the raw conversations that happens, I think that gives us additional rich data that we can use in terms of forming our questions and thinking about student learning.
Okay, and you're going to be doing a breakout session as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So my breakout session is called Upping Our Game in K-6 Classrooms Using Concept Circles as Game Boards to Deepen Student Learning. So people may not be familiar with concept circles, but they're a graphic organizer that can allow us to engage students in representing mathematics in visual ways and thinking about mathematics in visual ways and making those rich connections. So I've taken it a step further. I've develop concept circles and use them in different ways. And this time we're looking at games. And I just want to say I'm wearing my concept circle earrings for that session. So it's worth attending just for that. So
that sounds like it should be a very visual session then.
Yes, absolutely. So for both sessions, we're looking at having some fun as well, some joy in mathematics, and providing some practical ideas that teachers can use in their practice.
Okay, so thanks for that brief introduction to what you'll be talking about at OME 2026. Kathy, we look forward to seeing you this spring.
Thank you so much.
That was Kathy Marks-Crepin speaking about her featured and breakout sessions. Featured session will be on Thursday and her breakout will be on Friday. Our final featured speaker of the day will be Octavia Beckles. Her featured talk is called Let's Talk Mathematics for Empowerment and Liberation, where she says students need to learn math so that they can get a good job. This is a common message communicated about mathematics by educators and through curriculum. While this may be true, it's an incomplete story. Justice-oriented education requires a radical reframing of why math is important and what mathematics is used for. During this learning, participants will be encouraged to critically reflect on their beliefs about mathematics, the privilege math holds as a discipline within society, and what it means to decolonize mathematics teaching and learning. Mathematics is not only a content area, it's a lens for interacting, interpreting, and understanding the world. Thus, mathematics education needs to be rehumanized and embraced as a tool for empowerment and liberation. She will also be doing a breakout session on Thursday with the title, Let's Talk Culturally Relevant and Responsive Mathematics. That gives us some info about the featured and keynote speakers from the first day of the OME 2026 conference. The OME 2026 conference runs April 30th and May 1st at Fanshawe College in London. The theme is Let's Talk Math, and we'll have 190 sessions with keynotes and featured speakers on each day. Other features include the Technology Playroom, Indigenous Circle, Math Walk, Wine and Cheese, and more. There will also be a separate virtual conference that features its own keynote, live streaming of the face-to-face conference featured speakers, as well as many pre-recorded sessions. You can register for the virtual conference on its own, but it's also included with the registration for the face-to-face conference. Full registration is open now, with registration for the virtual conference opening in March. You can get more info at OME 2026 and register at our MCIS registration site. Both links can be found in the podcast description. That's all for this episode. On tomorrow's preview, we will hear from our keynote speaker for our virtual conference, as well as one of our longtime OME speakers, Ron Lancaster, who will be telling us what a math walk is. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, stay safe.